Hello everyone and welcome to this webinar today. I'm Frances Seely from the Enfield Climate Action Forum, and we're very interested on how climate change impacts on our locality. And clearly, climate change is going to affect some of the most disadvantaged communities in any area. And how we tackle that, how we look at their resilience, their sustainability and their well-being is really, really important. And there are many organisations that do work with disadvantaged communities towards sustainability. And one of those is Seeds for Growth, which is a charity. And we have Gregory Cohn with us today, who is their chief executive officer and founder. And he'll tell us if he is when we speak to him in a minute. And we're really pleased that he's with us today. So, Jeffrey, thank you for joining us. And maybe you could start briefly by telling us what Seeds for Growth is, not in detail, because we're going to go through that as we discuss your charity. But what is Seeds for Growth?
Certainly. Well, I was working in Tower Hamlets, running an agency to promote worker cooperatives, but I felt there were other issues that needed addressing for the community, particularly the Bangladeshi population had a high incidence of poor diet-related ill health. So to ameliorate that, we helped set up community food co-ops and launched 35 of those. But the important thing is, A, they were located in areas of need, and B, they were staffed by volunteers, and we worked with them for a year or so, and then waved goodbye and said good luck. And those that are still there are serving around 35,000 people. I tell you that because that philosophy and approach of empowering the community to set up projects for themselves is very much the ethos of the community gardens that I'm going to talk about in a moment.
I was going to say that's a huge project to be involved in. I mean, how did you get the idea? What motivated you to do it?
Let me be naughty and just give you a couple of other bullets about the charity. We then moved on. The food co-ops are just there for an hour or two a week. The convenience shops, where a lot of the poorer community unfortunately tend to shop a lot, tend not to stock fresh food. So we worked with 500 of those to encourage them to sell fresh food and link them to local schools. And then, as you'll find out, I like jumping around, and we got a £1.5 million program from Europe to work in prisons and wrote a training for trainers course recognized throughout Europe to help people with an arts background run workshops in prisons. But to answer your question of a moment ago, Frances, I was working as a volunteer on Meanwhile buildings in the Isle of Dogs, and someone took me to a piece of grass behind a housing block, and I immediately thought this should be a community garden. And I then had a thought and decided it would be wonderful to start a large program creating community gardens on wasteland in social housing estates. So with the community, we built two very high quality showpiece gardens, of which you can see one of behind me. The area there used to be a blank redundant children's play area where all the equipment had been stolen, so it had nothing in it. And as you can see, it's a very different character now. So the approach of greening communities, as we are calling it, is to go onto housing estates, identify land that can become a garden, talk to the landowner, get their consent to liaise with the tenants, and then COVID permitting, talk to the tenants, often electronically, get their interest in the garden. Most important, get them to volunteer to go onto the steering committee. And then we'd go back to the landlord and say, wonderful news, your tenants are extremely keen. Would you consider funding it? So that's a soundbite of what we're doing.
So, you know, in the work you do, from community gardens to food co-ops, which is a really broad range of activities, is what is behind it the fact that what you want to do is help communities build self-reliance amongst themselves?
Well, yes, the community gardens is a bit naughty. It's actually a community development project, of which the garden is the tool to achieve empowering and uplifting communities individually and as a community. So that once, for example, a community has formed a steering committee, led the development of their garden, they will have more strength and self-commitment about their own ability to do things. So, for example, when they have antisocial behaviour, they'll be more adept at challenging that. And similarly, when issues arise in their community, they'll have the strength to go and talk to decision makers and say, we need this addressed. And whilst you've given me the floor, Francis, let me actually run through why we as a charity think the gardens are wonderful. As I've said, it's empowering the community. It's combating climate change because there's a lot of new green area, reducing flooding because there's more exposed earth, creating shade for those hot summers we're getting, and also reducing noise from local roads because of all the new vegetation. And then there's the whole list of health and welfare benefits in terms of it's really fantastic for people who've got some mild stress or mental health issues to be focusing on something other than their anxiety, and wonderful for newcomers to the area to come and meet the community. Finally, it's a great place for children to play safely, and also for women to exercise in a slightly more private area than in the streets or the public parks. So that's in a long summary why we're so keen on these gardens.
I like the two finalies. There's always two finalies. Looking at the garden behind you, I mean, you're talking about green spaces. You're talking about spaces where people can create well-being and they can get some sort of peace, like the garden behind you. But there are also gardens about food production as well. I mean, there are different types of gardens, aren't there?
Well, although I have to admit to not being much of a royal fan, because of that, when the funding application came around last December for the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, I put it in the in-tray, and then I thought, hang on a moment, money is money. And I wrote what I thought was a terrific bid, and fortunately they did as well. And so we've received a £50,000 grant, which is used in part to have a massive celebration on a housing estate with about 500 people, possibly with the Mayor of London and the Mayor of Tower Hamlets and others. We're planting a new orchard as well, and that was the USP of the bid. It's going to be the Jubilee Orchard, and so named. But the most important element of the bid is that we're working with communities on social housing estates to give them confidence and skills to do food growing in the community gardens, in their flats or houses, on their balconies. And that's a program where we've actually been lucky and got quite a lot of funding for. So we might be rolling that out a bit more broadly throughout London. And that's terribly important. But let me emphasize that we develop the community gardens, or we empower the community to develop them for themselves. And it's their choice whether they want to grow food. It slightly disappoints me if they don't, but it's their garden. They need to decide, is it for children, flowers, ponds, birds, food, and also do they want it to be all communal, or do they want some of the tenants to have their own few square meters and look after it? So those are all decisions for the community. But we are very, very keen that food is grown locally and probably organically and saving, reducing carbon and the whole other issues of transport around the world.
You mentioned reducing carbon, and you say that in your website as well. And that's a recognition, isn't it, that well-being and green spaces and food production all go hand in hand with climate change.
Indeed. And we've written a business plan and an 8-year budget cash flow, because we wish to roll the program out now. But in that cash flow, I have missed something out, which is once we are starting several hundred gardens a year throughout the UK, we can actually sell the carbon saving and generate a significant amount of money. So that's something down the road. The plan is that we will start gradually doing more gardens in London, probably 7 or 8 this year. By 2026, we'll be doing 50 a year in London, which might sound ambitious, but if you think about it, there's 32 London boroughs, and there's a very powerful commitment to our greening from the London Mayor, and over half the London Assembly members have signed a strong pledge committing them to empowering this to happen.
So how would you sell your carbon savings?
There's a trade, you can sell them by traders. There's an industry out there. But I'm saying that more to highlight the positive impact these gardens will be having on combating climate change, that each garden will be creating a significant amount of new greenery through shrubs, trees, plants, and that is helping to reduce carbon. And we've got a volunteer who can technically work out the tons of carbon saved by the combination of all the gardens. But that's not really generating the income from that isn't the driver. It's an added benefit.
Yeah, and you also talk about, don't you, in all the work you do, you talk about promoting recycling and sustainability, which is important in terms of, you know, climate change as well. So how do you do that?
Well, first of all, we would try and avoid the new gardens containing any plastic. There will be exceptions like the water butts there where we're collecting water from the rain roof and so on. But even there, we would be looking at photoelectric cells to power the engine to spread that water around the site. But we'd be avoiding buying plastic pots and things like that. And also we'd be encouraging the tenants to start composting, not just the garden and the waste, but also all their domestic waste. So we would very much expect there to be a composting system in all the gardens we create. And composting is something you need to learn about. It doesn't happen naturally. So how you do it and the aeration and various things. So there would, on our website, there will be videos and information on composting, and we'd encourage people to do that. If you don't mind, Francis, let me just mention the rest of the UK, because we were so excited and positive about the benefits that we thought, why disadvantage the rest of Britain? Although we didn't really want to become a UK-wide charity. So we've gone to McDonald's and stolen their franchise concept, but I don't think we'll be having a meat burger or a plant burger from them. So what we're doing is we've developed the project called Greening Communities. And in that toolbox, we're putting a massive videos and information and forms about how to green your community. And Clifford Chance, one of the biggest law firms in the UK, had offered us a pro bono service to create all the legal documents to set up these franchises, inverted commas, around the country. We're not going to use the phrase franchise because it's a commercial phrase and it'll confuse people. This is a community social enterprise. And we will, from next year, starting to run some pilots and then selling them, hoping to have 100 of them around the country by 2027. They'd each have a target of setting 5 new green areas a year. And if you do the simple maths, that's 5 times 100, which is 500 plus the 50 in London. And if you get your calculator out and say that 20 people will visit each garden once a day, you get to 4 million visits a year. So the impact is something we're really excited about.
So it's going to be max seeds for growth. in a franchise way, which is quite an interesting way of doing it. I mean, when you sort of work with community gardens, I mean, how do you find them? Do they come to you? Do you go to them? I mean, for example, you've got one on the Isle of Dogs, haven't you? How did that start? Was that something that they initiated, or did you go to them?
Well, we've been hiding in our office during the 2 years of COVID, developing this project. We haven't really been out in the community. We're about to, with our Queen's Jubilee party, where we'll be launching Greening Communities London. And in a year's time, we hope to have a much more high profile launch for the whole country. No, we identified the land on the housing estates and then contacted the community. In those days, we door knocked. Now we'll use social media and forms for people to fill out and get information. I think in the future that the focus will be, we've got masses of volunteers. We've got 23, and we're about to have 3 coming from America and 1 from France. And they will be going cold into housing estates around London, finding pieces of land, documenting it, and then the charity will contact the landowner and say, would you be interested in us working? I think there is a role for us having a broader promotion whereby people, tenants and residents, start contacting us, and we'd welcome that. But I suspect most of the initiatives are going to come from us taking the lead. Although in the last few weeks, one of the biggest housing providers in London, who has 90,000 homes, has contacted us, and they're very keen that we start greening their community. So I think as the word gets out, the other reason in 2018 why I thought this is an interesting project is I suspected there was nobody else doing it, and which I think is true. There isn't any other organisation that's proactively going into housing estates and saying, let's do a garden. So that means we can focus more on what we're doing and not be looking over our shoulder.
I mean, when you say you work with tenants, are you just talking about council tenants or housing association tenants as well? Or do you work with the wider community?
Well, when on this enormous housing project that we're likely to take on, where we're creating a new community area on a flat roof the size of a football pitch, the community consultation will be the tenants on the estate, but also all the surrounding houses, because the kernel of our project is that a community garden is there for everyone. So we probably wouldn't do one with a gate and a key. And I mean, that's partly from funders' point of view, but also from our view. It's there for the people who live in the community. We'll encourage the steering committee to actively go out and invite other people to come and use their garden. So it's a very much a broad spectrum that we'd like to be involved in the garden.
Okay. I mean, you know, reading your website and listening to you, it's quite clear that well-being is central to what you do. And that interests us, because we are developing a project with the health authorities on climate change and public health. And your projects and all the things you do address the causes of poor health, doesn't it, through partnerships and working with local agencies. Tell us about that and how you do that.
Thank you. Somehow I missed that out in my bullets of the benefits. Being out of, what we did is we went to Queen Mary University and said, would your students like to do some worldwide research on the scientific evidence of being out of doors and gardening? And as a result of that, we've produced, I think, a 28-page booklet, which is not a scientific document. It's more drawings and quotes, etc., which is available on our website. And I was sort of amazed or gobsmacked at the things they came back with. There's a lot of research, for example, that says a pregnant woman will grow a much healthier and larger fetus if she's out of doors more often. But looking more at down to the overall population, the benefits of being out and doors and in the sunshine are well proven and will make you healthier both mentally and physically. And that's a very significant reason why we're doing the garden. Also, alongside the garden, gardening will be a physical activity. All people won't be that energetically gardening, but some will, and that's another benefit. So we link very strongly to the local NHS health service. We talk to GPs, and GPs these days are moving towards social prescribing. So if you go to them with issues about feeling stressed and anxious, they may well say, why don't you go and spend 2 hours a week at the community garden? Here's the links, here's the contacts. And particularly people, the mind organisations we're linking up with, so that people with mental health can maybe come in groups and be supported to do gardening and be out of doors. So that's a very significant reason to promote the garden, because it enhances health and well-being for all the users.
I mean, you do all that, but you also work with unemployed young people, don't you, as well? And you encourage them to start up workers' co-ops and even to, you know, take over some of the firms that they may work in, employees, firms. I mean, how do you manage to do that with everything else you do?
Long working day, and we have, during COVID, we struggled to get new funding because the funders somehow didn't realise that we were addressing issues for the poorer community. So we went down another route. As I said earlier, we've got over 20 volunteers. We have 13 corporates who are giving us a very significant volume of support. And as I mentioned earlier, the funding stream is starting to come in. The unique thing about this project, unique is a word one should use cautiously, but still, is that we, over the next 2 or 3 years with the gardens we're developing, we will be a financially viable and profitable charity producing a surplus. And that's a dream state to be in for a charity, that you're not going for funding, you're generating your own finances. We plan.
How does that work? How will you generate your own finances?
Well, when we go on to a social housing estate and encourage the landlord to fund the garden, which most of them will do because they have a community development budget, they have a ground maintenance budget, we're looking at maybe a typical price of, say, £30,000, including the capital cost for construction and our staff time. We'll make a small surplus of that from that project. But also, if the landlord says we should manage the whole project and tender the construction and appoint the design and build company, we'll actually be able to claim the VAT back. So in that £30,000 example, we'd have a £5,000 VAT reclaim, which is free money that goes into the charity. So there's a small surplus from all of the activity and a bigger contribution via the VAT. And the numbers are very positive when we're looking at doing 50 of those a year in London. We're also charging the Greening Community Projects a purchase fee around the country. A small fee, but it's still, we think people don't value things unless they buy them. And given the franchise principles, we're saying they need to pay an annual renewal fee as well. They're designed to get commitment. They're not designed to put people off. The other project we will be doing quite soon is knocking on the door of the government, telling them about this wonderful project, and inviting them to set up a £3 million grant fund and also to manage it. And how that will work is, where in Birmingham, Leeds, Manchester, Dudley, you set up a Greening Communities project, you'll be entitled to apply to the government for a £30,000 startup grant. That's not money for us. That's to encourage and facilitate the formation of the 100 projects around the country. I think the answer to your question is, how do we do so much? We have a commitment from our small staff, from our trustees, and from volunteers. And we're riding on a wave of, this is a great project, and the world is beginning to wake up to the fact they need to address climate change and sustainability, which this project is doing so effectively.
And you also, you mentioned it earlier, but you can tell us a bit more about it. You also have a criminal justice project on top of everything else. What is that project?
Well, we recognise that there are a lot of people with art skills, so poets, dance, music, who could run workshops in prisons, but the barriers where they lacked the skills and the training, and the prison service wasn't willing to invite them in unless they were equipped with working in that unusual environment. So we successfully applied and received £1.5 million from the EU. We had many members around the whole of Europe working on the project. We wrote a training for trainers program of level 3 upwards, and it's recognized throughout Europe. And we use that to train people with art skills to have the skills and confidence to run workshops in prisons. We also wrote a training program for prison staff where there's no common language between them and the prisoners. And finally, we collected evidence throughout Europe about the benefits of prisoners having use of computers for when they leave prison and how it reduces recidivism. And we put that in the hands of government and said, that's something you should consider. Just recently, the UK government is going down that road of recognising the importance of a prisoner not coming out IT illiterate. So I think the strain that runs through Seeds for Growth is that we like to empower people to do things for themselves. So we were empowering the artists to be able to go and extend the range of the people they were training. We're empowering prison staff to communicate where they had barriers, and empowering prisoners to gain the skills so that they can get information when they're out of prison and get work and get housing via computers and phones.
Well, when you say we wrote, obviously you didn't write all the training stuff yourself because you can't do everything. Do you have a sort of a group of researchers, or do you get funding to pay researchers from a university that will help you to write these training manuals and these reports?
Well, our style is to work with the community, identify a need, and then access the funding, and then appoint a team to manage that project. And on the training course, we got on board a partnership with the College of Teachers, who I think had their Queen's recognition over 150 years ago, and were a very well experienced organisation in writing training courses. So yes, the answer to your question is we'll pull in partners to deliver it for us. On the Greening Communities, we're planning to recruit 14 people over the next couple of years to take this project forward. Because as I've indicated, it's complicated and labor intensive.
That's really interesting way to work, and it's quite amazing how you develop these partnerships. Now, if another area in, for example, North London, where I came from, wanted to develop some of the activities that you've inspired, how would they go about it?
Well, they're welcome to contact us for information. If someone listening thought, it would be wonderful to have a food co-op in my community or my estate, we would be happy to invite them to come and look at our successful food co-ops. We've got templates that we can provide to them about how to establish them. So we would welcome inquiries to help set things up. And I mean, on the community gardens, I've already explained, we would, if a community wanted to do it for themselves without us, you know, we'd applaud that in a sense. So we would give them information and empower them to go ahead. So, I mean, our ethos is we've got a very open book. A lot of the information that we've covered is freely available on our website. And we are planning to very radically expand the website so that there are literally hundreds of documents and films on community gardening, so people can just dip in. And we're also wanting there to be a map there of the garden, so volunteers who want to work at a garden can find them.
So you could give people support who wanted to do it on their own, but could they do it with you as well?
Well, either. It's preferably with us. So, yes, we'd welcome inquiries about we'd like to start a garden, or we've got a piece of land on our estate which used to be a garden, is now looking as though it's propagating more weeds than anything else. So can you help and advise us? And then another thing I've slightly mentioned, but not completely, is we said we'd set up a steering committee, and we'll spend at least a year on the housing estate, empowering and upskilling the local people who may have never been in formal meetings in the past, to gain the skills and confidence to run a meeting. But when we wave goodbye and move on, we would go to the local corporates and say, would one or two of your staff attend these meetings and mentor the committee so that they feel they've got help if there are problems? And what I'm really saying in a long-winded way is the corporate sector are normally delighted to come into a community area and do some gardening and weeding and things like that. They actually much prefer that sort of work to doing more technical paperwork, etc. So there's a massive level of support from the corporates, but I wouldn't discontinue or discount them putting in some real professional services and also occasionally money. And we're doing a launch, the launch of the orchard. And I'm going around to the corporate saying, will you pay for the catering and bits and pieces? So don't be shy, is what I'm saying.
That's a great message about not being shy. I mean, they always say about the English, they're very reserved about asking for money, and you shouldn't be. I guess you should, you know, engage people in that way. I mean, we've sort of come to the end of our half hour now, and, you know, if anybody...
Can I just jump in with the corporates? Because each corporate will have something called a corporate social responsibility team, and the big ones will have several staff employed in it to give away hundreds of thousands of pounds of value. Might not all be cash, but they need to write in their annual report how they've supported their community, and they generally want to do that. But actually, if you try and track the name down of the person or that team, you will be challenged. And my recommendation is a rather old-fashioned one, is write them a letter and put a stamp on it. And that's a labour-intensive, easy way of communicating. Sorry, Francis, I'll...
You'll have to tell me what letters and stamps are. I think I remember, but it's going back a bit. To end up, I mean, if anybody wanted to contact you, excuse me, and find out more about what you do, where would they go?
Well, you're welcome to put my email address on screen, which is gregory@seedsforgrowth.org.uk. And I'd welcome receipt of your emails. And that's gregory@seedsforgrowth, all one word, .org.uk. But you're welcome to spread that email wherever you wish.
Okay, well, thank you very much for, you know, for doing that, because I think what you said is incredibly interesting and inspiring, not just because of the idea, but you talked a lot about how people can do it, how they can set up the step-by-step process to engage on the sort of things that you're doing, and in fact, to engage with you. And I think, you know, that a lot of people will learn a lot from that. And I'm sure in what we're doing in Eastern Enfield in public health and climate change, we'll draw on your experience and talk to you about that. And I hope we can get people involved with you on that as we develop things there, because engaging disadvantaged communities is a real challenge. And I think you've learned to do that in a way that we can learn from you. So, you know, thank you for, you know, joining us. Thank you for doing this.
Francis, if I can just jump in terms of contacting us, we've got a website. We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And also, I'm not sure whether you had the time, but we've got 3 2-minute films which really tell the story far more effectively than I have done. And you can link those on all our social media and see how to achieve what we've done for yourselves or with us. So thank you.
Okay, so that's great to know. And we'll also look at those films, and we'll put those up on our social networks, because I think what you do needs to be disseminated a great deal, because people will learn from it. So thank you for doing this, Gregory, and we'll end this interview now.